So today we're really happy to welcome to the program Patrick Ronan, Father Bills in Mainspring, to chat a little bit about what happened over Thanksgiving and what is going to happen for the upcoming remainder of the holiday season. Pat, nice to see you.
Thank you, Joe, for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, we're happy.
Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving as well.
Thank you very much. It was we were talking before the program this morning. It was nice to see family in person as opposed to screen time.
Yeah, it feels like it's been ages, right? To get together with people and, you know, not log into a Zoom meeting.
Exactly, yeah. How is Father Bill's Mainspring coping, you know, now during the pandemic? What are some of the highlights, I guess, you'd like to let folks know about?
Well, certainly the holiday season, it gets pretty busy from our point of view in the development office, you know, in terms of year-end fundraising and preparation for the holidays. But for the individuals and families we serve as we head to the winter, it's certainly the most challenging time of year. With the temperatures dropping too, we see an increase in demand for our services, you know, increase the number of people who need emergency shelter. The holidays are always tough because on one end, we're very grateful and there's a lot of community support. So we feel as an agency, like it's a really great time. But on the flip side, we see the highest demand. We really see people who are struggling in our community, who need our services and who otherwise may be alone or sleeping outside during the holidays. So on one end, it's a great reminder of why our services are needed. And on the other end, it's a time of gratitude because we have people in the community step up to help us get through these tough times. So Thanksgiving this year, was a little bit like you were talking about getting back to the way it was before. We kind of went back a little bit. We held our community meal in Quincy for the first time since 2019 at Christ Church, but it did look a little different. We had a smaller crowd and we staggered the meals over a two-hour period just so we could limit the number of people indoors at one time. And then we held other meals throughout the region, including at Father Bill's place in Quincy. And we expanded our meal delivery program. So we ended up delivering meals to about 500 households in the Quincy, Weymouth, Braintree area. And we wouldn't have been able to do that without volunteers and our donors who came out and basically allowed us to deliver a record number of meals in one day. So again, the demand is sobering to see how many people need our services, but we're so grateful and really inspired by the number of people who are calling us and reaching out and saying, how can we help?
How many meals would you deliver in a non-pandemic situation, Pat?
Well, prior to the pandemic, we did have a meal delivery program, but it was a bit low key. I'd say a couple hundred meals we would deliver. And then last year, when we didn't hold the in-person community meal at Christ Church, we expanded to about 300 or 400 delivered meals. And then this year we reached about 500, which I think is a combination of you know, the economic impact of the pandemic, and a number of people who just aren't comfortable maybe going to their family members or going to friends or to the Christ Church gathering to do an in-person meal. So yeah, 500 we expected around 400, 450. And we ended up getting 500, which thankfully we were able to accommodate.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, are you being impacted by, you know, the supply chain issues that we're hearing so much about in the news in terms of getting food donations?
Fortunately, that hasn't really hit us. I think it's, you know, why I read a lot of stories about turkey shortages but the local stores and the people who are, you know, the caterer that we worked with, we had plenty of items. And as you know, because we've talked about over the past year, we've been relying heavily on our volunteers to prepare meals offsite for, you know, 50 or 60 people and then delivering them to our site. And those have continued really without interruption. So we're not seeing that impact the food supply for our population, fortunately.
That is good news. Yeah, I know years past you've worked with the culinary arts program at Quincy High School for Thanksgiving. Did that happen this year?
It didn't happen this year, and it didn't happen last year either with the pandemic, in 2020. But in last winter, I think it was February of 2021, we did work with that program through a partnership with Stop and Shop. The culinary program made a delicious meal for our guests at Father Bill's Place. So they continue to give back. Mark Kelly over there, they do such a great job at the high school. We're just continuously delighted by the support we receive in the city of Quincy from the church groups and from, you know, the school system. A lot of young people who are becoming active and wanting to give back. So, you know, not this year for Thanksgiving. Hopefully, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, but hopefully we're back at it next year where we can partner with them for the Thanksgiving meal.
Sure. Now, are you still having to house some of your clients in area hotels because of the pandemic?
Yep. So that has been something that we've prioritized, is making sure that really until the public health officials tell us that it's safe to not social distance for our vulnerable population, we're going to continue to operate the depopulation sites, as we call them, the satellite shelters. So we're operating in Brockton at the former Roadway Inn, and then in Quincy for that population, we are operating about 100 rooms at the Ramada Inn right over the bridge in Dorchester. So we've been there since last summer. Prior to that, we were up at the Best Western in North Quincy. So with variants and numbers going up, and I mean, we've been successful in getting a good portion of our population and staff vaccinated, but we're not taking any chances. The health and safety of the people we serve and our staff and the community at large, really, because if it spreads, it's going to spread in the community, remains our top priority. So we're going to continue to operate those sites until we feel it's safe to go back. And that being said, and I know John's talked to you a lot about this, that we know now that we can't go back to the way it was. And that means basically warehousing human beings in a single location where you have 150, 160 people sleeping, you know, in two rooms, dormitory style, within 3 feet of one another. It's just not a humane response. And it's from a public health perspective, it's not the right response either. So COVID has been a wake-up call for us, and we see it as an opportunity to sort of change the way we operate. And fortunately, as you know, and you've been great, the team at QATV covering what we've been doing with the Housing Resource Center, we're changing the model, and we've broken ground, and we're heading toward a different approach to how we're going to not just help prevent homelessness, but how are we providing that emergency service, the shelter? And it's not going to be by packing people into a single room and putting mats on a floor. We will if we have to. We're not going to have people sleeping outside, risking their lives. But we're seeing this as an opportunity to change the way we do things.
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous goal, and it's really gotten nationwide attention. The question I always have is, you know, if you're not doing that, what's happening to those people that normally would be housed in the emergency shelter?
Right. And so that's something we are preparing for, is although the long-term goal is to reduce the shelter census by, you know, getting ahead of the crisis and making sure that people can stay housed, we will always make sure we have the capacity to bring people in if they don't have a place to go.
So
that's been our philosophy since the agency was founded in the early 1980s by Father Bill McCarthy and Pastor Wismar, is that nobody should be homeless, nobody should be sleeping outside. And so although the goal is to create more housing and to prevent more people from becoming homeless, we realize that that emergency shelter overnight response is something that we're going to have to offer because there are going to be people who need that service. So as we move into the housing, this new housing resource center model and service delivery approach, I think actually, you know, at our groundbreaking ceremony, Ward Councilor Brian Palmucci said it best, and I'm going to probably butcher his quote, but he talked about how the success of this program shouldn't be measured in how many, the number of beds we have, but the number of people who didn't need a bed at our shelter. And so that may be tough to count because we won't know who doesn't need our service, but ultimately we want to reduce the number of people who need that emergency shelter bed.
Yeah. How do you quantify a negative, right? I mean, in mathematical terms. Yeah. I know what you're saying. So it sounds like it's kind of a two-pronged approach. It's going to be a gradual, it's not going to be, you know, one day you just shut down. That's it. You know, people that normally need your help are going to be put out. That's not what's going to happen.
No. And I think, you know, there, when people read headlines and see stories about moving to more prevention and more housing and the shelter capacity, you know, the number of beds could be going down. I think people might say, oh, well, will there not be emergency shelter for people who need it? We want to assure people that there will be emergency shelter. We're going to continue to operate beds for people who don't have a place to stay. We're not going to, and I think all of our funders and our public partners would agree that we're not going to be turning people away who need our services.
Yeah. I'm just curious, you know, we're all familiar with the situation in Boston with the mass and casts, human tragedy, really. Is Boston taking note of what's going on here in Quincy and trying to implement some kind of a similar model?
Yeah. I mean, I think that every city and every region has its own unique challenges, and certainly the providers in Boston have a very, like you said, a tragic situation there. And it's not just a, you know, it's homelessness doesn't know, you know, city lines and boundaries. Like it's a human tragedy. It's not a Boston tragedy. It's like we're, as a people, as a region, this is a really difficult situation that we're all seeing. And I think the goal there for all the providers is to create more housing. And, you know, I know that some of the groups in Boston have been moving toward, you know, the more prevention services and trying to provide day services like we're going forward with the Housing Resource Center to connect people with the resources that they may need during the day. So if they're struggling with mental health, if they're struggling with addiction, if they need job training, you know, any services that you're not going to get in an overnight shelter to provide those during the day, there's certainly been a prioritization of that in Boston. I think they're certainly moving toward more housing too. Organizations like Pine Street Inn are building more housing like we are on the South Shore. And we're all up against, though, the fact that, you know, it's difficult to keep up with the demand with housing prices and the number of people who have our services. So whether they're trying to directly replicate the Housing Resource Center, I guess time will tell. But I think we're all, as a region, you know, and even across the state, we're all adopting the same approach, which is we need more housing and we need more day services that help people ultimately avoid shelter in the first place.
Right. That was one of the most exciting things to me that was mentioned during your groundbreaking. I think John talked about it. Prevention, you know, and providing programs for folks who may not be homeless right now, but maybe on the verge of homelessness to kind of stop it before it starts. That, to me, seems to be the biggest shift in the model, if you will.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it really feels like it's a no-brainer, right? That the best approach was almost like in healthcare, like if you could avoid a trip to the ER, if you could go to that specialist beforehand and and take care of the issue before it became an emergency and you needed that costly service.
Yeah.
That overnight shelter, ultimately, like, not only is that kind of the most traumatizing for people to have to become homeless and then stay in a shelter setting, and you can ricochet in and out of the shelter system.
Yeah.
Not only is that traumatizing for the individual, but it's a costly option too for the taxpayer. Because to provide the cost of overnight shelter versus the upfront cost of allowing someone to remain in their house or their apartment may cost a little bit more upfront, but in the long term, it's going to be more beneficial to the person and for the taxpayer.
Yeah. So how will you kind of change the narrative, Pat? You know, how will you kind of build yourself as, hey, here's a place where folks can come if you can see down the road that I'm going to have trouble making next month's rent or mortgage payment or you know, I'm going to be losing my job soon. How do you kind of change the narrative of what will be the Yawkey Housing Resource Center and get folks, you know, to come in at that stage rather than when things get, you know, even worse?
Well, I think number one is our operating hours. And so pre-COVID, because I think everything you have to reference it as pre-COVID, we were operating overnight. So yeah. Our guests came to us between 4:30 and 6. They stayed overnight and they had to leave at 7 a.m., by 7 a.m. And during the day, our guests, you know, would go to the library, they'd go to their jobs. So that's what we were funded for, overnight service. That's what we are funded for. So we didn't have programs. Number one, we didn't have the space, but we also didn't have the resources to provide day services. This new housing resource center will include a day center. Okay. And we'll have additional space. So people can come to us at, you know, 10 a.m., 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If they know in a month, they're potentially going to be facing a situation where they may lose their housing, they can come to us and say, I may be homeless in a month. I may be homeless in 2 months. And we can triage that situation and say, well, how can we help?
Yeah.
And that may be connecting them to flexible funding that's available so they can pay their back rent. Or maybe it's connecting them with another community partner who specializes in an area where they really need help. So I think the biggest thing for us is to get out there that we're not going to be just open at night. We're going to be a day center. If you need a service, you come to us. And a big part of this housing resource center service delivery model is the triage role, which is if you have an emergency or a housing crisis that's coming, you come to us, we assess and we figure out what's the best way to approach this. And within the past year, we've built a new triage department and we're adding to that staff by the day. And that will include prevention specialists, diversion specialists, people who are out in the community, identifying who's sleeping outside, and then diversion specialists who will be meeting with folks when they come in. And let's just say someone is from a community outside of the South Shore, even outside of Massachusetts, and all they might need is a bus ticket home. You know, just recently we had an individual who had family out of state, and we were able to use flexible funding to have them go back to their home community and stay with family there. And it seems so simple, but without that upfront investment, that individual may be staying in our shelter. And like I said earlier, ricocheting in and out of the different systems of care we have. And ultimately what they may have needed was just a ride home. And we're not going to be, you know, transporting people outside to other communities. It's right. We need to make sure that they have the supports there. If they're from another part of the state or country, we want to make sure that where they're going to receive the services. So they're not just ending up in another shelter there.
Yep. Do you think you're going to have to address what many see as a stigma attached to, you know, homelessness in order to encourage folks to seek help?
Yeah, I think it's really challenging for a lot of people to, I mean, we all face hard times and we need to ask for help. It's humbling. Mm-hmm. And regardless whether you're facing homelessness or financial difficulties, mm-hmm. emotional difficulties or problems with addiction, it's really difficult to go to family, friends, or to systems of care and say, I need help. I can't do this on my own. So I think just that sort of human nature is it can be difficult to say, hey, I need help. And I think you're right. There is a stigma with homelessness, but I think that's where our shift in the model is going to help, because we're not, I think a lot of people know us as the shelter provider, mm-hmm. that we serve people who are experiencing homelessness, and we do, and it's a vital part of what we do, but we serve people who are at risk of becoming homeless. So people who are facing a housing crisis. So I think moving away from, you know, the Housing Resource Center is for individuals who are experiencing homelessness. No, we are serving people who are at risk of a housing crisis.
Yeah.
And in this part of the state, especially in the greater Boston area, I think we can all relate to, you know, the difficulties of having to keep up with rent and other costs of living. So I think we need to remove that stigma and realize that it's not a testament to you as a person or as a family to be struggling to face a housing crisis. We all face hard times, and it's okay to ask for help. Yeah. And that's what we are as a community, is we're going to rally around the people who need help to make sure that they can continue to thrive.
Yeah. Well, it's right in your new name. It's right. It's Housing Resource Center. It's right there in the name. And I knew Father Bill personally, and he would not be offended by having his name taken out of Father Bill's homeless shelter. His goal from the very start was to not be associated with that. So he'd be in full support, I'm sure.
Yeah. And he lives on certainly in the name of our agency. Yeah, you're right. John Yaswinski will always talk about how Father Bill would always say the goal here is to take the sign down off the shelter. And what we're doing here is we're not eliminating the shelter. We are opening the Housing Resource Center, which will include an emergency shelter. So it's really transforming our approach to this massive and complex problem that we have as a region and society.
Yeah. When's it going to be open, Pat? When's the ribbon cutting?
Oh boy. You know, it's always tricky to pick a day, because then the day comes. I know on the sign that we had at the groundbreaking, it said 2023. So that gives us a 12-month window. So we're hoping that the first phase, which would be the Housing Resource Center building, would be open by the spring of 2023. And then the second building, which would be the 30 units of permanent supportive housing, would hopefully be open by the summer of 2023.
Okay. All right. It's a good goal to strive for sure. Yeah.
I'll certainly let you know. I'm definitely be like, hey, QATV, you have to be there.
Oh, we fully intend to be there. We're going to follow this through to the end and beyond, actually. So we're happy to be a partner with you in providing information about it for sure. With the 30 permanent units, Pat, how are those residents chosen? How does that process work?
That's a great question. And I think there is some, you know, sometimes people in the public can assume that we really get a lot of choice and we get to handpick people who move into housing. There is a process. There's a risk assessment that we do, that we really want to serve the most vulnerable. So our permanent supportive housing accommodates really the poorest of our neighbors, those who are most vulnerable and those who are chronically homeless. A lot of individuals who come to us and to stay in the shelter really only stay for a few days or for a few weeks or a few months, and then they're able to get back on their feet and get back into an apartment. The housing is really intended for those who are having a hard time leaving the shelter system because of the physical disabilities that they face. So we have a system in place to assess, it's a vulnerability index, to use a technical term, that assesses who in our programs would benefit from the permanent housing. So they receive case management in addition to, so this 30% of the rent, 30% of their income they pay toward rent. And then they also, they receive personal case management from our staff. So it's not just, hey, you're in a housing unit, best of luck to you. Our staff is regularly meeting with these individuals, making sure that, you know, helping them meet goals if they want to, you know, work on some of the issues that have contributed to their homelessness, help them get access to healthcare, resume building, services like that, that can really not just, it's not about just getting in housing, but it's also thriving and becoming more self-sufficient. And certainly having a house, your own housing unit is a great start. And I think a lot of stuff will come after that. But to have an enjoyable, fulfilling life, you want to be able to also thrive and work and feel healthy. So I think that's where our case management will play a big role.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll be bringing on additional staff and services to provide that. Yeah.
We will. Both with the Yawkey Housing Resource Center, we will be not only adding to the triage department, but also adding to our, housing supports as well. Sure. And that's why we are, as John has talked to you about, we have launched a capital campaign called A Path Home, where we're trying to raise $10 million to support the construction of the Housing Resource Center. And it'll also go towards some of those programmatic expenses that will be in our operational budget.
Okay. How much have you raised so far?
Oh, I'm not going to say a number because I know I'll end up having it wrong. Okay. Having it wrong, and I'll have to call you tomorrow and be like, hey, Joe, I got it wrong.
Okay. How about a percentage?
Yeah, I know that we received $2 million from the Yawkey Foundation, $300,000 from the Arbella Insurance Foundation. $100,000 from, let me just make sure I have that number correct. Because again, Joe, I don't want to call you tomorrow and say,
you have to edit that out, Joe.
$100,000 from Rockland Trust and Blue Hills Charitable Trust. And there's some other gifts that are coming in that I know that we're probably going to more publicly announce, but okay. I will say that we're making really good progress. We've been really just delighted with the community's response, and the support from the business community has been incredible. But we still, I think January, we're going to launch a more public phase of the capital campaign where we can try to get to that finish line and meet that $10 million number.
Okay. We'll be happy to help you promote that once you do. So please keep us in the loop for that. Oh,
that would be great. Thank you.
In the short term, though, can we talk a little bit about the holiday season and what you hope will happen over the next couple of months?
Absolutely. So the holidays, like I mentioned earlier, can be a really challenging time for our mission because of the number of individuals and families who come to us in need of the basic services. So really right now, when people reach out and say, what can we do to help? We will always first say, you know, providing a cash donation provides us with the most flexibility. Because during the winter and during COVID, when we're operating additional sites, having that flexible funding to operate these additional sites is crucial. So making a cash donation, which people can do on our website, helpfbms.org, and they can mail it to us as well. Mm-hmm. And I'll provide that address. It's 430 Belmont Street in Brockton, Mass. That's where our administrative office is. And then if folks are looking to donate items, gift cards are always a great item to receive because we can distribute to families and individuals, and that provides them flexibility, whether it's groceries, winter clothes, stuff that they can purchase on their own. and some of the other high need items that we have during the winter. You can imagine adult thermals, tops and bottoms, sweatshirts, emergency blankets and outdoor blankets, ponchos, adult gloves and hats, adult winter coats and jackets, winter boots. And you're seeing a trend here, a lot of winter items, because sure, this is a very, very difficult time of year if you're experiencing homelessness. And sadly, we do have individuals who are sleeping out in the community. And so our outreach workers are making sure that they go to those individuals and provide the clothing, the blankets that they need, the food, water that they need to survive. These are individuals who, in many cases, are choosing to stay outside, and we want to make sure that they are safe. And so those items really go a long way. I mean, just getting out of, leaving the house in the morning and getting in the car, it's a different feel in December and January, and I know everyone experiences it. Now imagine that around the clock, that stinging freeze. It's absolutely brutal. And so actually we were very fortunate. Quirk Auto Dealers recently generously donated 80 fleece blankets in partnership with Subaru. And they're just great blankets, very comfortable. So we've already started to distribute those to some of our guests and people in the community. So stuff like that really goes a long way during this time of year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And do you also provide another meal for the Christmas holiday, Pat?
We don't provide a community meal that's open to the general public, but we do have meals at our shelter sites. So we'll make sure that guests of the shelters who, you know, maybe don't have a place to go, aren't seeing family and friends on Christmas or celebrating the holidays, that they have something special. We decorate our shelter sites, and we really make sure that they have a festive environment. And we are lucky. Last year, Jack Conway and Company sponsored a buffet meal on Christmas and gift bags for our guests. So it's that type of stuff that during a difficult time of year, our guests know that they're not alone, and that there are people out in the community thinking about them. So if anyone's watching and they're looking for a way to give back this time of year, definitely check out our website, or you can contact us. You can email us at info@helpfbms.org. And there are plenty of ways you can give back.
Okay. How about items for the pandemic? Do you need masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, stuff like that, that was so in demand, you know, in the beginning of all this?
Fortunately, we're in good shape with that stuff. We've been very, both, I think, in combination of, with the combination of donations and also the supplies we're receiving. You know, early on, I know the National Guard came out and donated a bunch of masks and hand sanitizer. So we have a good stock in place. And, you know, cleaning supplies early on, we had a shortage of. But right now, we are in good shape in terms of the extra supplies related to the pandemic. If that changes, I will reach out and say we need to get the word out. Right now during the winter, those things I mentioned, really the items to keep our guests warm. Yep. Those are the high priority items.
Okay. And should folks follow you on social media, Pat? Is that a good way to stay in touch?
Yeah, definitely. We, have a Facebook page, a Twitter, page, Instagram, LinkedIn, so definitely follow us on social. We're most active on Facebook, so you can search Father Bills in Mainspring, and it's a good place to connect with other supporters and also receive updates on the, you know, if we're holding fundraisers or if there are certain drive items that we need, we'll publicize that on social media.
Okay, great.
And also promote the great videos that QEA TV have produced for us. Like our Yawkey Housing Resource Center groundbreaking. We post links to stuff like that on our social media as well.
Sure. Anything else we should let folks know about right now?
Well, I just you know, it's really important that we say thank you to, you know, everyone out there who has stood by us, not just during the pandemic, but, you know, over during the holiday season where things can get really challenging for us. So just since within the last few months, I just want to make sure I have the an accurate list here of organizations that have supported us. We're organized, Joe, as you can tell.
Well, I should let folks know I made you move your chair away from your desk so we'd have a cleaner background. So
yeah, That's it. That's exactly it.
I'll take the blame.
Joe has to move, and all my information is now out of reach. That's the reason I'll be giving.
I'll take it for you, Pat.
No, but we've had a tremendous response from the community. The local church groups have really stepped up and provided prepared meals. And then the local businesses, Arbella Insurance, Harvard Pilgrim, Blue Cross, Blue Shield. We're just so fortunate to live in a community that cares about one another. And, you know, especially this time of year, and instead of, you know, trying to say, well, you know, we're going to take care of ourselves, they're saying, well, how can we take care of those who don't have what we have? And so we're very grateful for that. And we just want to wish everyone a happy holiday season and say thank you for all you've done for our mission, particularly over the last couple of years where it's been as challenging as ever.
All right, good place to leave that. Thank you for sharing information with us here at QATV. And please reach out if we can do anything more.
Thanks, Joe. As always, you've been a big supporter and helped us spread the word on our mission and our high needs. So thank you for all you do and the team at QATV. Best to you and yours, and have a great holiday season.